While import prices account for much of the inflation Europe is wrestling with, inflation also reflects higher corporate profits and, to a lesser extent, labor costs.
Between profits and labor, we know that profits have relatively done better than labor. Nominal wages have been increasing, but real wages, right, purchasing power has been eroded. On the other hand, if we do a similar exercise and kind of try to get a sense of real profits, they haven't really been eroded.
In today's program, what might happen to corporate profits when inflation drives Europe's workers to push for higher pay.
My name's Frederick Toscani. I'm a senior economist in the European department, and I focus on inflation monetary policy in the euro area.
Frederick Toscani also co-authored a new research paper that looks at what's behind Europe's inflation. Check it out at imf.org. So Europe saw double-digit inflation for the first time in decades last fall. And while it has come down, it's still very high. And I think most Europeans would attribute that to continuing supply chain disruptions and soaring energy prices. But your research tells a different story. What do your findings tell us about what's driving inflation in Europe?
All right. Thanks very much. No, you're exactly right. That was our starting point. So when inflation started to increase, it was actually negative in late 2020, kind of started to rise in 2021, and then really accelerated into 2022 with the energy shock. And I think there's consensus that sort of these import prices played a huge role here. So what we tried to do is take a step back and say, okay, but in relative terms, how much does that really explain the import part? And of course, energy is the key one here. And we wanted to contrast it with labor costs. After all, wages did start to increase at some point. Mm-hmm. And then the sort of residual, and you have taxes in there and company profits. And in a nutshell, what we find is that the import part, which was the starting point, does account for about 40% of the average inflation between 2022 Q1 and 2023 Q1. But company profits account for about 45%, so slightly more. And then labor costs and taxes really much smaller share so far.
And so how did you come to those numbers? I mean, walk us through your analysis.
So, you know, usually as economists, we try to have these statistical analysis. Now we go back in the data and we pick up correlations. If we're lucky, we're able to make some causal statements, say this caused inflation to increase. Here we took kind of a different approach. We wanted to see what did the higher prices pay for, so to speak, right? So where did they go? And so it's much more of an accounting exercise that we do here, which doesn't really lend itself to saying this is what caused inflation, but it allows us to kind of attribute inflation. Okay. And you know, maybe it's useful to think about one specific item, say a pizza. Mm-hmm. So the restaurant, it has labor costs, right? It'll pay its workers. Mm-hmm. It'll have a lot of non-labor costs, ingredients, food ingredients, rent, and energy costs, right? And then the owner will charge a price for the pizza that's somewhat above those costs, and that will be the profit. You know, so all else equal in this kind of accounting sense, you can see how the price of the pizza will go up if either the profit goes up, the labor cost goes up, or the non-labor cost goes up. So that's really a kind of the starting point for what we do. Except that, of course, we don't do it for a single good, but we do it for the whole economy.
And so, according to that, corporate profits are driving inflation in Europe then?
So, okay, so in the decomposition, yes, they're the major counterpart. But let me stick with the pizza example. So let's abstract from labor costs, say the only cost the restaurant has, only the owner works there. And so his costs are non-labor costs, and let's say they're energy and food, right? So he has to pay 10 euros for those costs. He charges 11 euros. So he has a 10%, what we call the markup, right? Charges 10% above cost and makes 1 euro profit. Now the energy shock happens. His costs double to 20. He still charges 10% above his costs. So the price is 22. But you'll notice his profits doubled, right? He was making 1 euro, but now he's making 2 euros. So in our decomposition, we'll pick that up. Profits account for part of the price increase. But really what is driving the increase is that costs increase, right? All the pizzeria owner has been doing is he has been maintaining his profit margin. He hasn't been, in quotation, greedy, and he's not suddenly charging 20% above costs. And this is where it's quite subtle, right? Because all he's done is he's maintained his profitability.
But when you're saying, just to sort of deconstruct this a little bit, when you're saying that you could at least attribute about 45% to corporate profits in terms of European inflation, has profitability within corporations actually increased to any great extent?
Right. So a really tricky question. So I wish I had a good answer for it. One thing we know is, let me start with perhaps the distributional part between profits and labor. We know that profits have relatively done better than labor. You know, we think about wages, nominal wages have been increasing, but real wages, right, purchasing power has been eroded. So workers have had to shoulder part of the sort of cost shock Europe has faced. On the other hand, if we do a similar exercise and kind of try to get a sense of real profits, they haven't really been eroded. They're not massively up either. So we can say that relatively, so far, profits have done better than wages. And in some sense, that makes a lot of sense because prices can adjust very quickly. You can do that right away. Wage negotiations are kind of more infrequent. It takes some time. So we'd expect that to correct itself to some degree. But then, okay, your question was specifically, you know, profitability, the kind of economist's markup we like so much. And it's just hard to measure. There's some evidence from researchers at the Bank of Italy that shows that in some sectors that were hit kind of by these pandemic supply-demand imbalances, profitability has probably increased in Germany, for example. Construction, or suddenly everybody wanted to remodel their house. Mm-hmm. And there was just not enough supply, so the suppliers that were around were able to increase their prices more than needed to cover their costs. There's probably some of that, but a lot of variation, you think, across sectors, across countries. And on aggregate, our sense is more stable profitability rather than sharply increased profitability.
So it's a bit of the scenario where there is increased demand in certain sectors, and therefore probably you can attribute some of that profitability increasing because of that. So were you surprised at what you were seeing as compared to, you know, what may have happened during other energy shocks or what is going on perhaps in other countries or regions?
Yes, I think to some degree, yes. Let me start with the less surprising part. Just over the last few months, a lot of people had looked at, so we look at consumer prices really, which is sort of the novelty, but a lot of people had looked at the GDP deflator, which is the price of GDP. And the whole exercise starts from the fact that GDP is the sum of all income in the economy. So it's compensation of employees, profits, and net taxes. And this is just by an identity, it has to hold. And so you can see relative contributions. And a lot of people had noticed that profits were contributing to some degree. Having said that, when we compare the euro area with, for example, the US and Canada, it does look like in the euro area that profit contribution was a little bit higher. In the US and Canada, you get quite a much bigger increase in labor costs earlier on, certainly last year in 2022, when it's only picking up now in the euro area. And one thing I thought was very interesting when we looked at it, we thought, you know, what's the best comparison we can do? And what comes to mind for a lot of people is maybe the oil price shocks of the 70s.
Okay.
And relative to that, it does look quite different. Back then, labor costs were really what was accounted for in higher prices. And our hypothesis is that a few factors at play here. One is probably less bargaining power of labor these days than back then. There's also less indexation. So back then, a lot of wage contracts were kind of explicitly indexed. So as inflation picks up, wages automatically go up. That's much less prevalent today. And also, inflation expectations are much better anchored today. So everybody expects in the medium term inflation to come back. That wasn't the case back then. So you more easily had these dynamics sort of, you know, we'd call it a wage price spiral developing.
So yeah, speaking of inflation targets, the ECB has been talking about getting it back down to 2% by 2025, and they've been pretty determined, or they seem to be very determined to do that. So when you look at, you know, corporate profitability and the scenario with wages and the whole labor aspect of this, what are corporations going to need to do to make that 2% target by 2025?
Right. So we can use the framework we have where we decompose inflation into import costs, profits, and wages, and turn it around and do exactly what you say. Ask, what would it need for a certain inflation path in terms of those components? No? And then we know import prices are going to help. We had the gas crisis. Prices are still higher than historical levels, but have come down a lot. Crude oil prices the same, food prices similar. And of course, we just had the developments on grain this week, but right. So we have to be conscious of those risks. But in the baseline, we think import costs are going to help quite a bit. So then we can ask, okay, taking those import costs as given, what are the different combinations of profit share and labor costs that would deliver inflation at target in 2 years? And so as a baseline, we say it seems reasonable to assume that the corporate profit share would normalize to 2015-19 averages over the next 6 quarters or so. And what falls out then is that nominal wage growth around 4.5% will be consistent with that. So if the profit share went to not normalize, you can see that would not leave a lot of room for nominal wages to grow and recover some of those real wage losses. So indeed, under the baseline, at least the relative allocation of income between labor and profit has to shift a little bit to deliver that over the next 18 months or so.
And so what does that mean for monetary policy, do you think, in the euro area for the next couple of years?
So in essence, the way we see this particular contribution to the debate is to say, look, you have labor markets and you have product markets, right? In the product market, the firm decides how to set its price, depending on how much demand it sees and the supply conditions, and you have the labor market. We know in labor markets, both from historical evidence and because of the real wage losses, that there'll be some nominal wage growth. So we think monetary policy has to maintain its restrictive stance such that in these markets, demand is restricted to some degree for firms and wage setters to accept this equilibrium where we don't get everybody setting higher prices in response to each other, the other higher prices, right? So in essence, firms have to accept that labor costs go up without increasing their own prices further.
So they're going to take a hit if wages are going to rise to the extent that they should.
So first, monetary policy is not the right tool to influence distributional aspects here between firms and workers. But what it does imply is that tight policies continue to be needed to anchor expectations and restrict demand such that both firms and workers accept price setting for wages and in good market that are consistent with the ECB's inflation target.
There you have it. Frederick Toscani, an economist in the European Department at the IMF. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Frederick Toscani is the co-author, along with Niels Jakob Hansen and Jing Zhou, of some new research that looks at what's behind inflation in the euro area. Check it out at imf.org. There's also a blog at blogs.imf.org. And you can hear more IMF podcasts at imf.org/podcasts or wherever you listen. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.